afternoon. My name is Clay Merchant, and on behalf of my co-investigators, thanks for the opportunity to present our work on a clinical prediction rule for chlamydia and gonorrhea urethritis among adult emergency department patients. To give you a little background, as you know, there's probably the number of patients presenting to emergency departments for urethritis who may ultimately be diagnosed with chlamydia or gonorrhea is increasing. And the philosophy of emergency medicine, I'm an emergency medicine physician, by the way, is that you diagnose and treat, and we'd like to do it in a rapid fire order in that manner. The problem is there are no rapid tests commercially available for chlamydia and gonorrhea, and many of the times that when we see patients like this, we treat empirically, presumptively, and take some sort of guess on whether or not they have an infection. And CDC recommendations, though, are saying that you should probably empirically treat if they are known to have contact with someone with chlamydia or gonorrhea, if the prevalence in your community is high, or if you can't assure follow-up. And that last point is what I think really pushes emergency department physicians to treat first and ask questions later. The problem is this leads to a lot of overtreatment. And overtreatment has a number of costs. Costs to the person and also in the healthcare system, and can lead to problems with antibiotic resistance and adverse reactions. So we really need to try to figure out a better way to be more efficient on who we try to start empiric therapy for. And so this work in progress, and I'm going to say that early on, because this type of research that I'm presenting has a number of limitations. What we hope to do is later have a larger prospective study if we can get the funding for this. And at the end of the presentation, I'll take a collection. So what we tried to do is produce a clinical prediction rule. And that was try to help emergency department clinicians decide when they should start empiric therapy based on what they know about the person at the time of the emergency department visit, and when they can just test and follow up on those results. It was a retrospective study at the Rhode Island Hospital Emergency Department, which is in Providence. It's one of the largest emergency departments in the United States, with the adult and child volume of over 150,000 patients visit annually. What it was is that we took patients who were diagnosed presumptively by the emergency department physician or clinician as having chlamydia or gonorrhea urethritis. Of course, they didn't have the laboratory results, so this was their presumption. And then we took those patients who we knew had chlamydia or gonorrhea testing performed, and we could get their lab test results. So you had to have both. So these are a group of population that clinicians thought they had chlamydia or gonorrhea urethritis, based on whatever presumptions they had, and we could get the lab test results on these folks. If they came in multiple times for the same visit, for the same problem, within the last month we didn't include them, or if they already knew they had chlamydia or gonorrhea, they were not included, or if they didn't have the test performed. And our hospital, for the last few years, has been using urine-based testing. We collected data from a six-year period, and we found cases using ICD-9 codes from the hospital billing databases and the emergency department provider billing databases. Searched both of them independently, cast a very wide net using the ICD-9 codes to find as many of these cases as possible, then reviewed them for the cases that were actually pertinent to the study, then independently looked at the laboratory databases to see how they matched up. In building prediction rule, you're trying to find predictors, factors that are associated with your outcome that can discriminate people into two groups. In this case, do they have chlamydia or gonorrhea or not? We looked at information that was available to us and available to the emergency department clinician at the time of the first visit. And so since it was a retrospective study, we relied on what they reported and recorded in the record. There are a lot of limitations to that. But from there, we picked out the best variables, did a number of statistical tests, and picked out the variables that were most closely associated with being able to discriminate with those who had a laboratory confirmed infection or did not. From this, we took our big database and divided it into pieces randomly. First was a training data set, where we took those factors that we thought were going to be associated with the outcome of having a chlamydia or gonorrhea infection, and then finding combinations of them that we could put together a prediction rule that could be used by emergency department clinicians. It needed to be fairly simple. I'm one of these kinds of guys. It does need to be very simple. It needs to be something that you can actually use and can remember. And what we figured out basically is that we could group risk factors in a hierarchy. And so it wasn't, in this hierarchy basically was not just the number of risk factors, but combinations of particular risk factors that mattered in forming the prediction rule. And I'll show you what I mean by that. And what you ended up with was 5 risk levels. Then we took our prediction rule and then applied it into the testing data set to see how well it worked. What did we come up with? From an ICD-9 code search, there are about 1,200 visits for that 6-year period. We could review most of them. After we reviewed each of them, it ended up being about 985 cases with possible chlamydia or gonorrhea infection as diagnosed by the emergency department clinician. Unfortunately, about 160 of those patients didn't have testing performed. They were just treated empirically. Okay. So they couldn't be included in our prediction rule study. So we're left with 822. Of those, almost a third had chlamydia, gonorrhea, or both. About 13% had chlamydia alone, 12% had gonorrhea, and 3.3% had both. And our outcome here for this study was chlamydia, gonorrhea, or both, because in our setting, if we're going to treat empirically, we're going to treat for both infections. I think this slide illustrates my point about antibiotic overusage. So if you compare whether or not they had an infection, a laboratory-confirmed infection, versus about whether or not they have antibiotics, we get some good news is that for the proportion of people who had an infection that were treated with 96%. So we did great. We treated most of the people who had infection. The problem is that if you didn't have an infection, 90% of those got antibiotics. So it sounds like if you present for this problem, you're going to get antibiotics a very high percentage of the time. So we need to try to figure out a better way. Here are the folks that were in our sample. Most were black. Most did not have private insurance. Most presented because they had symptoms in this group. There were some who had symptoms and had a known STD contact. Someone had told them, either they got a letter from the state or reported to them, that they had sexual contact with someone known to have an STD. But there were other reasons that they presented. And the most common symptom of those who did have symptoms were penile discharge and dysuria. Of those who had a known STD contact, about 75% of the time, it wasn't recorded in the medical record, so this is not the greatest of variables that we put in, but it ended up still being pretty important in our clinical decision rule. But of those who did report a STD contact, most of the time, they didn't know what it was, what the person had, about 10%, and about 8% knew that it had been chlamydia. In the demographic variables, this is looking at each of those demographic variables and seeing how strong they're related to having a laboratory-confirmed diagnosis of chlamydia and or gonorrhea. And as I mentioned, we looked at different forms of these variables to try to figure out which ones are best discriminated. And we look at different forms of age, race, and insurance. And you can see, I think, best on that left-hand column that being under the age of 28 gave you about a 2 times greater odds of having an infection, and being black or Hispanic about 1.4 times greater odds, and then having no insurance about 1.5 times greater odds of having an infection. And then looking at some medical history variables, different forms of symptoms, whether or not they did or not, but what was the biggest discriminator was if they had any type of discharge with or without dysuria, they had 5 times greater odds of being diagnosed with chlamydia or gonorrhea by the laboratory. And if they had any chlamydia or gonorrhea contact, about 1.7 times greater. So those are the variables we used. We ended up with 4 of them. Race fell out in our multivariable analyses and found it not to be as important as these other factors. And age found to be a little bit lower. We started with 28, which was the median, but if you look at and use age 24 as a discriminator, that worked better. And this is the hierarchy here. So of those four risk factors, put in particular types of orders in terms of their ability to predict. And then the training data set was what we used to perform the prediction rule, and the testing data set was used to see how well it performed. And this is the predicting the presence of an infection. And what you pay more attention to here is the likelihood ratio. And the likelihood ratio here is unfortunately a little small. What you'd like to see is likelihood ratio is greater than 10 at least. Okay. And so this our ability to detect the presence of infection was modest at best. But then looking at the ability to predict the absence of an infection, we did a bit better. And let me put this all in perspective with these two graphs. So let's say you know the prevalence of infection in your emergency department. You've done tests as we've done, and you see it's about 39%. So you look at the bottom row there in plot A, a presence of infection. So then you say, well, I'm going to assess those four risk factors using the prediction rule and see how many they have and in what order. And if you follow the black line, the black solid line, and look at that little circle there, and that is having three or more risk factors at a prevalence of about 29%. So if I talk to you and find that you have three or four more risk factors, your likelihood of having a chlamydia or gonorrhea infection is really about 55%, which is greater than chance. Flipping a coin, if I looked at you, do you have chlamydia or not, and flip a coin and decide whether I'm going to empirically treat you is 50%. So at least by this method, it does improve it greater than chance. Not great. But the greater the prevalence in your emergency department, the better those risk factors perform, but not as well as you'd like. But take the flip side of that is that with that same prevalence of around 29% or so, and look at the top line, which is no risk factors, your likelihood of not having an infection is close to 100%. And same for if you have two risk factors, which are not chlamydia or gonorrhea contact and not discharged. So it helps a little bit more in predicting the absence of infection, which is good in terms of withholding empiric therapy while waiting for the test results. So what are the conclusions and implications? Combination of demographic and clinical factors can modestly assist us in predicting which patients have or do not have an infection. But as I've mentioned, we do need prospective external validation. We need better control of the variables and finding ones that are stronger and can be used in our model a bit more definitively. But if it does work out, this may help promote some more effective empiric treatment for these infections. And we'll do questions at the end. Thank you.